The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor, brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. So today we're going to continue our occasional series of marketing models and frameworks, and we've reached C. We looked at the first part of C, costs and customers, previously. Other C's that I could have chosen were communications, channels to market, and competitors. But they're all quite chunky, so we're going to concentrate on competitors. So in part one of Marketing Model C, I challenged you to think about the costs of your product to your customer. Not what the product costs to make, not the money the customer hands over, but the actual cost to the customer. The real cost, looking at the time the customer has to spend, the effort they have to spend, is there any training they have to do? What are the other wider implications? And the only way to really understand that real cost to your customer is to actually walk in the customer's shoes and get into their mindset. And in the same way, you have to do a similar thing with what the customer views as your competitors. Not those that you benchmark yourself against, but what the customer thinks of. And this struck me most around Rolls-Royce. So the iconic car company, Rolls-Royce, you can think about the Rolls-Royce with the little winged figure at the front. It's now owned by BMW. And the head of Rolls-Royce said in a radio interview some years ago that Rolls-Royce is not in the car industry or even the automotive industry. Now, that may surprise you. Surely Rolls-Royce is the epitome of luxury cars, as one of their most famous newspaper adverts explains.
At 60 miles an hour, the loudest noise in the new Rolls-Royce comes from the electric clock.
Reach out. Control is only a fingertip away, for this is the car that responds to your touch. Let ingenuity be your true north with the car that shows you the way.
If you Google Rolls-Royce, you'll immediately see there are comparisons with Bentley's, Aston Martin's, debates about which is better. So what on earth did the head of Rolls-Royce mean when he said that they are not in the car industry? What he was claiming is that Rolls-Royce is more than a car, it's a luxury. So people who treat themselves to a Rolls-Royce are buying a symbol of success. Their customers are definitely not buying a method of transport. It's a means of showing that they've succeeded, a treat to themselves, a symbol to others. So Rolls-Royce's direct competitors are not necessarily other car manufacturers, but other luxury products, such as an expensive watch.
You never actually own a Patek Philippe watch. You merely look after it for future generations.
Or a yacht, or some other symbol. As another example, if you think of Harley-Davidson, the big bikes. Harley-Davidson decided to launch its Born Again Biker advertising with a tagline, Breathe.
Keep scrolling. Be generous with likes. Order food. Skim headlines. Set 3 alarms. Check followers. Order shoes. Use AutoSend for flowers. Use AutoSend for birthdays. Tabs open. Curtains closed. Use headphones. Run in gyms. Order cars. Keep scrolling. Stay in bed. Order food. Keep scrolling. Don't go outside. Don't go outside. Don't leave the phone behind. Do not engage your heart, your mind. No eye contact. No sync. Don't blink. Don't think. Don't ever let yourself feel this alive. Ride.
And it was encouraging mainly men who'd wanted Harleys in their youth to own a Harley in their middle age. And Harley said their main competition was not another bike brand, but a conservatory.
Here I am, nearly 2,000 feet up in the Pennines. It's freezing and blowing a gale.
What a challenge for double glazing. And this is the Tan Hill Inn, the highest pub in England.
Guess which double glazing they've got? Wouldn't think you're in the same place, would you? And here's why. Everest replacement windows. These new frames are made from tough UPVC. And they've got the famous Everest draft-proofing. In fact, nowadays, this is the only draft you find up here. You only fit double glazing once, so fit the best. Everest.
Apologies, that was a double glazing ad rather than a conservatory ad, but it's one of my favourite ads of all time. So the empty nesters that they are aiming at had a bit of spare money. So the conversation at home would rest on how to spend that spare money. And the choice might be between a home improvement like a conservatory or spending that spare cash on a Harley Davidson. So does this mean that Rolls-Royce can ignore Bentleys and Harley can ignore other bikes? Of course it doesn't. You have to benchmark your products, your service, your pricing, your brand and your value offering against your direct competitors. And it's vital. Marketing theory encourages you to horizon scan, look at potential new products, new competitors that are coming on the scene. What I'm trying to get you to do is think outside that sort of standard competitor reference. So a key model that's always quoted when competitor analysis is mentioned is Porter's Five Forces. Michael Porter is an American academic, and he created the Porter's Five Forces model back in the late 1970s. It's been updated, but you'll still find it's the original model that is the one that's used. The clues are the name. There are five forces, but I want to concentrate on three of them. And it's usually drawn as five boxes, and you're looking at things like the bargaining power of customers, which if your customers are very strong and they have strong bargaining power, that may affect your competitive advantage, the prices you can charge. And there's a bargaining power of suppliers as well. Those are the two boxes I don't really want to concentrate on. The ones that I am interested in are the threat of new entrants. So constantly looking for new companies muscling in, offering a cheaper product, perhaps a more convenient one, perhaps one that better meets those overall customer costs. The intensity of competitive rivalry. So that is the Rolls-Royce versus Bentley, the Pepsi versus Coca-Cola. The intensity of trying to take market share from each other. But finally, and the one I really want you to think about, is the threat of substitute products or services. So what I'm stressing here is look beyond your easily identified competitors and think wider. Harley-Davidson realised it could open up its sales by looking at the born-again biker market, not entirely to the satisfaction of its hardcore devotees. But in doing so, Harley had to learn what the born-again biker may be looking at in other ways to use their money. And this applies to organisations that don't appear to have direct competitors, such as pharmaceuticals. I had a really interesting tutorial with a student who works in marketing treatments for a very rare disease. And when we first started the conversation, she was adamant that she didn't have competitors. You either took this treatment or you didn't. But actually, as we discussed it, we realised that while there's no other conventional Western medicinal treatment directly available, there are plenty of alternative wellness movement, alternative therapies that are competitors. And for her customers faced with a rare disease, they did actually have other options for treatment. So in conclusion, you need to look wider than just your competitors. Competitor analysis and competitors are not a simple given. It's very, very easy as marketers to get caught up in what we're directly selling, think everyone is fascinated about our minor product improvements and messages as we are, think that everyone is concentrating on just our direct competitors and forget to take the bigger picture. So when thinking about competitors, take a step back. Who are your customers thinking about as your alternatives? And with that thought, that's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.